Okay, because I guess it's still morning. whatever, yes. So today I wanted to talk some about using situated model of learning and leadership, or nursing leadership, and this is with FNP DNP students, and projects that would integrate primary care and public health objectives, which is our, we have a fairly large, I'm at Rush University, I think compared to other places, public health nursing faculty. And most all of us do advise FNP, DNP students and are very involved with teaching in their DNP projects and in certain classes. They have to take community assessment and population health planning, and the public health nursing faculty teach that typically. So we're fairly involved with the primary health care students. I don't have any financial relationships to disclose. So we want to talk about collaboration between public health and primary care nursing faculty to facilitate the projects, the model of situated learning in nursing leadership, and using that model in DNP projects. So we say in our mission that we educate leaders. Being, you know, and that's true, I think. So, so the primary care and public health report talks about integration being a key issue in improving population health. They talk about linkage of programs and activities to promote overall efficiency and effectiveness and achieve gains in population health. There's some core principles that you would say that the common goal is improving population health. They involve the community in defining and addressing needs, and the FNP students need to learn this as well. Strong leadership to bridge disciplines and programs, sustainability, and collaborative use of data and analysis. So in our FNP, DNP projects, as we define them at Rush, their projects have to improve a measurable outcome for a population and address at a population level their primary care role. That's in line with the DNP essentials that talk about developing and evaluating care delivery that meet current and future needs of patient populations, and ensuring accountability of healthcare quality and safety. And as I said, the public health faculty we teach in the courses we manage are collaboration with community partners, conducting community assessments, identifying areas that need change, gathering data to support the need, and implementing and evaluating the changes, all of which do require leadership. So if you look at the nursing literature on teaching leadership, it's actually, I went looking at the literature quite a bit, and I was really rather shocked that there's not a whole lot out there. So in the nursing literature, unfortunately. So the literature in nursing is concentrated on models identifying leadership characteristics. So typically leadership characteristics are described as communicator, visionary, achiever, so on, discoverer, valuer, enabler, shaper, modifier. And I think we'd all agree with those are characteristics of leadership. And some on educational strategies in leadership development. So they'll talk about shadowing leaders in healthcare, analyzing their leadership styles, developing change projects to practice leadership skills. And I teach organizational and systems leadership, and I have a co-faculty member here. And we teach those things in that class, do we not? We do. So we follow what the literature says. And there's some on differentiating, managing, and leading, which are different things. And some about the cognitive learning model, how you go from one level to another, awareness of leadership to leadership at the organizational level and above. But very little on how do you actually teach leadership. Definitely some on the competencies of leadership, but really how do you provide situations to students in which they can learn leadership. And there's actually, if you look at the business leadership models, and if you look into, I've looked at literature on teaching leadership to principals of schools and leadership to pastors, they talk about what they have literature on what situations, how do you provide the situation in which you can learn leadership and the context. So there's very limited on that. But if you look at some of the other professions, you'll see discussion of situated learning and leadership. You also, in Benner's work, Radical Transformation in Nursing, she talks about using situated learning and teaching nursing. Benner being based on the Dreyfus model. So if you look at the Benner and the Dreyfus models of skill acquisition, they'll point out it's not linear. You have to have unstructured problems rather than totally structured. The unstructured problems possibly have an unlimited number of relevant facts and features, and they have to be able to figure out which ones are important. You have to go from novice to expert and so forth. And that leaders recognizing both the importance of context-free and situational information. So things like, you know, you have evidence-based practice guidelines. They're not totally context-free, but they are. You've got them, but how do you apply it, you know, in a disaster situation, which has got lots of unknowns. And then formal structural and process models and expert systems. They don't always fully describe the higher levels of expertise. So situated learning, they talk about the need to contextualize learning, it's concerned with role formation, which is certainly we talk about in developing nurses. You have to have learning in the same context in which it's applied. It's a social process, so that they talk about having the co-constructed knowledge between instructor and learners. Emphasis on coaching with an expert and what they call legitimate peripheral participation in communities of practice, which is sort of like you begin on the periphery, and as you learn, you get more and more into the center of the role, which makes sense. So that, I've talked about that. So in this case, I'm going to use an example that we worked with FNP students in a project. And they would have to learn to use evidence appraisal and research synthesis to translate research and build evidence-based care, design and implement programs of care that impact health outcomes, and they have to meet their requirements. So in this example, I have three DNP students, and so far I've had about five or six master's students working on this project, but we're working with a community agency that serves people with intellectual disabilities. People with intellectual disabilities have poor health outcomes. They're much more likely than the general population. They have multiple chronic conditions, typically have polypharmacy, especially as people get older. I've seen some things at the average number of meds, people who are in community services, 8 per person, that's the meds. You know, so they in polypharmacy, they're very likely to be hospitalized for ambulatory sensitive conditions, to have multiple emergency department visits, so forth, and have higher rates of mortality for certain things. So we working in this agency, and they said we have a lot of emergency department visits, and we want to try to do something about that. So we helped them to analyze the data that they had, and what were the more common reasons for the emergency department visits. And there's previous research in nursing that proactive interventions can get positive results on these things. Some of the environmental, I guess, context for community-based agencies, you have the closure of institutions. There's been emphasis on community integration, self-determination. They talk about a move away from the medical model. Probably part of that move away from the medical model, though, has been not looking very closely at health issues. There's a lack of public health surveillance data. The CDC, in their call to action, they talked about gathering more information about people with intellectual disabilities. There's a limited official role for nursing. If you look on the State of Illinois nurse site, the description of a nurse, their job description is you sort of manage the medications and make sure that all the orders are correct. But if you look for a role of a what they call qualified intellectual disability professional, they have an extensive role defined, most of which nurses can and should be doing. But the limited role of nursing, got state budget cuts. And in this particular agency, though, they recently got some computerized data. So we did look at, they would probably have approximately 1 to 90 for nurses. And the frontline staff get 1 week of didactic training, 2 weeks on the job. They must have an eighth grade education. There's basically no training in basic and public health, in any health. They do get stuff on taking vitals and basic first aid and who to notify. So the 3 most common reasons we found when we looked at their data were falls, behavioral psych, sudden illnesses. And it's when we looked at this health risk screening tool, which was developed by nurses some years ago, the score of 3 or over did very much predict emergency department visits and hospitalization, so that the fact that they have this in place, they can start identifying at-risk people. They had some previous efforts at trying to get their falls down without much success. So when we looked at it and looked at the residential staff education on falls, not much. So we're working on a program to improve coordination between the frontline staff and the nursing and other supervisory staff. The students developed a sort of a modified fall prevention protocol that's evidence-based. There's not a lot in this population, but certainly among senior citizens there are. Formal tool assessment of the home environments. I actually have a son who lives in, not this agency, but I went in there one day and they like replaced all the nice wood floors upstairs. All of a sudden they had slick tiles all over them. Go, what a fall risk. You know? And most of the people are over 50. Why would you do that? But I don't think it's in the conception. Working on some fall prevention exercises probably for people who've already had falls. The second one, behavioral psych, second most common ED visits, actually the most common reason to be hospitalized. We looked at, actually interesting, Georgia, which has a lot more stuff on health promotion than many other states. They have a whole protocol on preventing behavioral psych visits that's pretty good. The student is working on a incident report debriefing protocol, actually taking the stuff from Georgia because they have a pretty good one, and working with staff on how to debrief. The staff all get a de-escalation type of training once a year, but there's no interim follow-up to are you really following the protocols and things that you're supposed to know. So their works, that's what that's being done, is and to roll the all 3 of these students are doing it first in a couple of homes and then rolling it out. Third most common reason were sudden illnesses, which included UTIs, infections, GI bleeds, seizures. These were common ones, and they're fairly common reasons for hospitalization. And again, some of the stuff about taking, you have protocols on how you would maybe identify or say somebody's got the symptoms of a UTI, but you've got a staff who have who are required to have an 8th grade education, and there's very little in their training about health, and how are you going to work with them so that it's better identified as you go through and get people into services before they end up in emergency rooms and hospitalized. In this case, the agency already had a head-to-toe symptom checklist for frontline staff. They provided training in it, but the frontline staff typically didn't use it very well. They said it was too complicated, too long. So one of the things she's working on is, okay, this person, for instance, has cardiac problems. Then we need a checklist just for what's going on that might be exacerbation of cardiac problems, train the frontline staff on that. So it's much more directed to the person rather than a long checklist. And certainly working on trying to train that frontline staff in some of the common symptoms of common issues. The evaluation we would use then would be were the frontline staff and residents involved in developing the program? Were they satisfied with the tools? Are they using them? That would be the first thing. And then hopefully the agency would see some decrease in their rates of ED visits. Okay. So it's connected to situated learning in that they working with real problems. It's elements of unstructured. There are evidence-based protocols and various things for some of these issues, but we're working in a situation where people aren't really trained in those things. And where a role of nursing is not very well defined as being active on those issues. And it's co-constructed with students and faculty, and we're trying to also improve the space and role for nursing leadership. And are some other things that are involved. This also may fit in with efforts to improve the career development ladders for frontline staff. And certainly situated learning would talk about building leadership capacity in organization. And this is the model we've been using, based on Benner and Lavie and Wagner. And those are references. Any questions? Since I have 11 seconds. Yes. I'm reasonably familiar that there are a lot of issues with people when they were taken out of institutions, but they're put into settings where there really isn't much support of health. And with the current difficulties, often people have Medicaid, Medicare, so getting providers who are really following up with them, and where nursing doesn't have a very well-defined role. And yet it's a population that can drive a lot of health costs when they get sick. It's a huge gap. And certainly, but some of the elements of it, you know, the situated learning, part of it is you have elements of structure. So you've got evidence-based protocols. There's, you know, we can define what, you know, symptoms of UTI are. We can say that this is what you do to prevent falls. But how do you implement it in situations that are not so structured and where, I'm always appalled when I look at the job description for a nurse. I go, we can do so much more than that. And it's not thought of in regard to how to really work with this population. But there's other many similar populations. You know, if you're working with homeless, you're working with the seriously and chronically mentally ill, prison populations might have better health care. But where there's not much attention to these populations, and nursing certainly has a tremendous possibility of working with them, and hopefully with some of the situations with the Affordable Care Act, we'll be more encouraged to do so. And I would agree, though, being able to run an IV does not make you a nurse. So, thank you.